You're listening to What She Said, a podcast for creatives and new bloggers hosted by me, Lucy Sharif, freelance journalist and blogger living in London. Welcome to episode... God, I don't even know what episode it is, actually. I don't know why I started with that. Welcome to whatever episode this is of What She Said. I can't actually believe I've been going this long. I think I've probably recorded about 10 interviews, and I've, at the time of recording this pre-roll, I've put out 3, which is crazy to me. And I've had such a nice response as well, so thank you, everybody. Everybody who's reviewed and rated and just tweeted and shared and whatever, I really, really, really appreciate it. So in this episode, I have a natter with Elizabeth of Rosalilium about her 9-year blogging career. We delve into the misnomer of introversion. We chat a little bit about mental health. She has got absolutely stacks and stacks and stacks of knowledge. She's forged a crazy diverse career, and she has loads of blogging tips, so it's a really, really good listen. If you're feeling stuck with your identity in blogging, or you need some help with branding or advice on how to find your voice, this is the perfect listen for you. So let's dive in.
So, my gosh, where are we now? 2017. So that means I've been blogging for almost 9 years now.
Wow.
Which makes me pretty old school when it comes to the blogosphere. I got started actually in travel blogging. I had a quarter life crisis and packed up my life, quit my job, quit my flat in London and everything, and did the backpacking around Southeast Asia thing. And just as a way to share my story with my friends and my family back home, I set up a blog, which I wrote almost every single day, I think. And after that, I went a second, in the following year, I went again, had a separate blog, and I just got so used to writing every single day that when I came back, I just had this, it was almost compulsion to, if I don't know if that's the right word, to write and just share every single day. And I set up Rosalilium as just a dumping ground for things that inspired me and a way of thinking through ideas. And within just a couple of weeks, I discovered this massive community in the blogosphere of people doing similar things. And it was one of the most inspiring communities that I'd come across. And I started to meet people I might never have met before. And within a year or so, I got my first paid blogging job, and I was writing for another website. And I realized, oh, this is actually a career, this is a business, this is an opportunity, and a lifestyle, a professional lifestyle almost, and it kind of marries up some of the things that I love doing. So it kind of happened out of a necessity to make sure that my parents weren't worried about me as I was traveling, and then just pure addiction to sharing my story. As narcissistic as that might sound, it really
not
is.
At all.
I think it comes out of this idea that with this sense, this loss of community around us. We used to grow up in small communities, but everyone moves all over the place. I'm a bit of a nomad. I have lived and moved about 20, 30 times in my life. And by finding this blogging malarkey, I've found my own community. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to see them physically every day, but I have them there. And I think that's what has drawn a lot of people to this this kind of work, as well as a hobby, and I think that's just fantastic.
I think it's interesting that quite a lot of introverts tend to be drawn to it, probably for that exact reason.
Yeah, definitely. And I didn't even know, I didn't really know that I was an introvert until blogging.
Yeah, no, me neither.
See other people talking about on Twitter, and I was like, what's this? Like, I'd vaguely come across it at maybe school or college, but never really looked into it. I think our definitions of what an introvert is was wrong, of 15, 20 years ago. And now, through, you know, sharing information, I've realised that being an introvert's about energy usage and not necessarily about being shy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I thought I was shy, and I was always told by other people, no, you're not shy, you're too confident.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure I know how I feel. But then I've realised actually what it is that I'm introverted, which is slightly different. I'm a confident introvert. I can go into a room and I can talk to people and I can have a conversation with them, but it will probably wipe me out for a week afterwards.
I'm exactly the same. I think there's a lot of people out there as well who feel probably really, really similar. I mean, you can be that person and be shy and introverted. But for the majority of us, especially when you're older, right, you've learned how to socialize at a party, but then you need to go home and sleep and turn your phone off and not speak to people for a week afterwards. That's kind of how it is for me.
I've never been quiet, I guess, is the best way of putting it. I've never been quiet. I've always been a loud and a big personality. And what someone say to me? Someone once said I could hold the room, I guess. And that came out of, I had a background in drama and in theatre and the performing arts. And I guess I was interested in the idea of characters and telling stories. Mm. And maybe that feeds into what I'm doing now with blogging. But, you know, in my past, I was quite confident going on stage. And I am. I can walk onto a stage and I feel very comfortable. I do a lot of public speaking. Mm. And I gain so much satisfaction out of that by being able to share knowledge and to empower people. There's a lot of, again, I think it's still energy exchange. And I don't think I necessarily have the answers about it. And it's something I'm really interested in at the moment is this idea around energy and energy exchange. So I can easily walk onto stage. I can walk into a room and run a training session for a few hours and it will be successful. People will appreciate it. We will connect. They will learn. I'll feel good about it. But the next day, I won't leave my house.
Mm.
I won't leave my house. And I've noticed that pattern. I've done it long enough now to notice that this is definitely a thing. Introversion is a thing.
Mm.
But I can still, because of blogging, because of social media, I can still maintain contacts.
Yeah.
I can still maintain my community. I can still run my business because we have email. And that has given introverts an opportunity that they might not have had before.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I'm incredibly grateful for, is that I'm able to run a business and be an introvert and still take care of myself at the same time.
That probably leads on quite nicely to, I mean, there's so much I want to talk to you about. I've got absolutely stacks and we'll get there. But so I really want to talk to you about mental health, because one of the videos that you shared on YouTube, I found really spoke to me quite a lot, because I've had depression and anxiety for most of my life, and you shared a really powerful video about it. And I wondered how blogging has maybe helped enable you to kind of have the job of your dreams without, you know, with lots, because you talk about self-care and self-love a lot. And I wanted to pick your brains on that, really.
I think, let's see, by being able to run my own business, I'm able to earn money and work through this journey of grappling with my mental illness.
Yeah.
And I might not have been able to do that. And I think this is something, this isn't something I've talked about yet publicly, and I don't think it's spoken about very much, is the financial impact of suffering with a mental illness.
Mm.
And when someone is going through a mental health episode of some sort, whether it's depression or anxiety, bipolar disorder, addiction, or so many different things, is often you're not able to work. You cannot function. That's the whole point of a mental illness, is you do not function like you might not with a physical illness. But because of the stigma and the lack of understanding at society at large, there isn't necessarily the support networks to help you with that. And what I experienced was periods of unemployment and being unable to work and support myself when I was going through depressive episodes. And that has had repercussions for years, and I'm still feeling some of those repercussions. And, you know, things like debt, the amount of debt that people with depression can get into because they're not able to work and they still have responsibilities, etc. And what I found with my business and with blogging and any kind of digital business, actually, is that I was able to start creating a livelihood for myself that didn't rely on me being physically present at all times or sticking to a schedule. I think I would be way more successful if I stuck to a schedule. I think that would definitely help. But I'm aware that if I want to live a healthy lifestyle, I have to prioritize lots of different things. And by having the opportunity to run my own business means I can take care of myself when I need to, and some things still work. That's not to say I've figured it out completely, and I haven't. And I do have the support of a partner right now. So I think that's important to point out. I have a fiance, and he has supported me at times as well. And I feel so much for anyone who's on their own going through any kind of mental health episodes and they're not able to work, because it is horrendous if you don't have that support. I think we're lucky that at this point in time that we can create income streams that don't rely on us being physically healthy or present at all times. I can run my business from my bed if I need to. I can take my laptop into my bed. I can sleep when I need to. And I wouldn't be able to do that if I was in a 9-to-5 job. Yeah. If I was working in, say, marketing at an agency in the city, I would be expected to be there at least 9 till 6, Monday to Friday. And there might be days when I can't cope with that. We haven't quite got to a point in our society where it's deemed acceptable to take take mental health days off.
Yeah.
You can have sickie days if you're poorly, if you're physically unwell. But it's kind of difficult to explain to line management when you are mentally ill, you need a day off because you're mentally sick.
Yeah.
I don't think we even have the vocabulary to communicate that within a corporate sphere. And I think there are campaigns and there is a lot more awareness than there used to be, but we're definitely not there. And trying to unpick that and make it changes there, I think will take time. But what I quickly discovered was that I need to work around what I can do.
Yeah.
I know my limitations, and it was almost out of necessity that the video that you referred to was, and it still is, one of the hardest things I've ever shared publicly. I still carry an element of shame around it, and I know objectively I shouldn't, and that's why I shared it. It was the objective side. We knew it was important to share with others to connect and share a story and perspective, but the personal part of me, because there's so much meaning and pain surrounding it, is still quite embarrassed about it, about what I've been through. I think that'll take time for me to deal with. There are times I still want to delete that video.
Really?
It's really hard. It's really hard to accept that I went through that. I guess I still carry that shame and feeling of weakness, and I never want to be seen as weak. And you know, again, the stigma is just there, and I think. And maybe this is another issue in society, is the idea of the kind of hero narrative around illnesses, that you get an illness and you get over it and you're brave and you're a hero over it. And it's a very definitive kind of start and finish narrative. But I don't think illness is like that, especially mental illness. You don't get depression, work through it like a brave soldier, get over it, and you're a hero.
Because it's not like that.
It's cyclical, and for many people, they will have it again and again. So it's a process of learning to cope with something that might come back again. Some people have one-off episodes, and that's great, and I'm so pleased that they're able to work through it and good for them, but for some people don't. And so there's a constant struggle, I guess, and grappling and figuring out mechanisms in which to cope with what has come before and what might come again in the future, and how to deal with it or cope with it or do things differently.
What are your, because you cover a really wide range of topics, what are your favourite topics to explore?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, yeah, starting off with the idea of lifestyle as a niche or a genre is problematic. And the only reason I use it is because there isn't really any other label you can give it. It's just me. It's a personal blog, which essentially is what lifestyle blogs tend to be in general. So it's a personal blog, and it always has been. If you go back through the archives, the 7 years worth of archives, it is very much a lot more diary style than personal, and I think it's become less personal in the last couple of years, for whatever reason. In terms of topics that I enjoy, well, at the moment, probably well-being and self-care, because I sort of shifted focus. So it's a well-being lifestyle blog, in theory. That's my aim for 2017, as I am personally going through this journey of figuring out better ways to take care of myself in a holistic way. Because everything I was kind of reading in terms of well-being is always tends to be focused on the physical. And I know that, my well-being isn't about how much I've exercised or how nutritious the food I eat is, as important as that is. It's also about mental health. It's also about creativity. It's about spirituality, and a lot of very personal things that I don't feel we talk about as much in the blogosphere, or not so much in a personal way in media in general, and in a holistic way. So I want to be able to talk about, say, a healthy recipe that I've come up with or tried out, as well as sharing recently what I gained out of a mindfulness course that I went to. So for me, the topic of well-being is so broad but personal, and I want to take blogging back to the personal and the connections, because when I speak about myself and my experience, I'm able to connect on a much more deeper and fulfilling level with my readers, and the friendships and the connections I make out of that I find are more positive and beneficial than when I'm trying to be something else in blogging, or trying to follow a trend, or trying to do what others are doing. And I think we all do it.
Absolutely.
We all compare ourselves, and especially when you see someone being successful, it's very hard not to look at that successful person and think, oh, I could probably do something like that. And then the next thing you know, your blog is being pulled in all sorts of different directions, because you're doing this type of thing because that blogger did it, and you're doing this because that person's successful of that. And you kind of lose track of what it was about you that made your blog unique and interesting for your readers. So I think the well-being shift has helped me focus back on what was important to my readers and what's important to me as a person, because it actually just makes the job easier as well if it's something I'm actually interested in and current in what I'm doing every day, instead of trying to write about something that's irrelevant to my daily life.
Yeah, absolutely. Fitting a square peg into a round hole.
Yeah.
I think that it's really interesting that you touch on that, because I think that authenticity and that journey that we all go on as bloggers, you're absolutely right. I think I don't know a person that hasn't gone through this, where you let the noise in of you should do this, you should do that, etc., etc., and forget that you should be doing what you want to be doing. You should be writing about what you want to be writing about. So I should say, actually, that you do a lot of training and public speaking, and have run conferences for other bloggers as well. So would you say that that is one of the lessons that you also teach other new bloggers?
Absolutely. I think so. Yeah. So I guess I'm an authority mainly because mainly because I'm a bit of a bossy person, to be honest, and I can't not share what I earn along the way. Again, I am just compelled to share everything. Yeah, so I started Blognex, which was the blogging conference in 2013, mainly out of a necessity because there wasn't anything for me to go to. A lot of the blogging conferences at the time were for parenting, mummy bloggers, parenting bloggers. And I, you know, don't have children yet. And I felt like there wasn't really something for us that sort of fell in the middle. And there were a few travel blogging. I just didn't fit the niche. And I wanted there to be something for us lost souls in the wide lifestyle ocean of blogosphere. And so I just did it for, like, I was like, oh, you know, it was just my usual, everything that I've done in my career, I've normally gone on Twitter going, we should do this. And everyone's like, yeah, that's a really good idea. And then the next thing I know, I'm doing it. And my fiance keeps telling me off for doing that. He's like, stop organising things. We've got other things to do with our life. That's why I have so many blogs and websites, because I stop writing things. I really need to tone it down. There's more now in terms of blogging events, workshops and conferences, large and small, and that's great. I since gained the confidence to actually tweet Brit Mums a couple of years ago and say, would the fact I haven't had a child prevent me from coming to your conference? And they replied, obviously, you know, no, please come. So don't let that stop you going. If you're interested in blogging or anything for that matter, you don't have to fall within that niche to attend the conference. In hindsight, it was silly. I should have just gone. That probably said more about me than the organisers.
I would have done the same.
We did make a joke about it. The first Brit Mums I went to, I have quite a few mummy blogger friends now, and it was great. I met a whole group of bloggers that I'd never really met before, but they did all sort of, you know, take the piss, really.
You were on a panel with Mother Pucker, weren't you?
Yes.
I remember you saying.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I've done lots of public speaking. It kind of happened by accident, but the feedback's been good so far. And I think it comes from a place that I am generous with my knowledge. So yeah. I don't feel the need to be overly competitive and keep everything to myself. I'm happy to share with everyone because I think that that there's a saying that a rising tide lifts all ships or something like that. And I believe that we're only as strong as the community around us. And by empowering the bloggers around me, I'm empowering myself. Like, we're only going to get better as an industry if we all get better. Mm. So there's no need to be secretive and keep all the knowledge to ourselves. Yeah. I'm happy to just share, you know, it's believe in an abundance of knowledge sharing. I've gone on a tangent so much. What was the question?
You haven't gone on a tangent at all. I asked a really, really long and rambling question, which
it was about authenticity.
Yeah. And is that a lesson that you find, I guess, yes, with newer bloggers, I think there is a lot of noise out there telling them they have to do something a certain way, which I think can really hold people back.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer, it just in life in general as a human being, just do whatever the fuck you want. Seriously. Agreed. If you try to please everyone in life, you will please absolutely no one.
Yeah.
And that can be applied to blogging or relationships or the workplace, anything. And like authenticity, I think, unfortunately, the word's been overused and in the wrong place. So it's lost a bit of its meaning in recent years. You know, thanks a lot, kinfolk and darling or whatever.
I'm about to publish a blog post about authenticity.
I agree. I do some blog coaching as well. And I agree. The number one gripe I'd say almost every single one that I've spoken to blogger struggles with is their identity. Mm. And so this would be my advice. This would be like, if anyone takes anything away from what I'm saying today, my number one advice is, if you're struggling with authenticity, or you're struggling with a niche or what to write about or anything like that, switch it the other way around. I think a lot of us find it hard to talk about ourselves. So switch the question or switch the perspective and think to yourself, what do you want to be known as? And I think when you think, what do I want to be known as? You think about the perception and who you really are, like come from the outside in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I know what's important to me, but I almost take it for granted.
Yeah.
So I've always been, the agony aunt. Even when I was at school, when I was 12 years old, I was the girl that everyone would be like, oh, can I speak to you? Oh, I've got problems. Everyone. I was like the one everyone trusted with all their secrets. So I was the one sorting everyone else's problems out. And now here we are today. I'm in my 30s and I'm the agony aunt for Blogosphere magazine. You know, like I've just constantly been solving people's problems. That's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
But I just take it for granted because I just like being helpful. And I never actually thought that that was a particular angle or something to share. It's only through a lot of work and intentional work on myself and my blog and my online identity that I've realized how I want to be known is I want to be helpful. Mm. I want to be the person that empowers people, that shares useful deep knowledge, whether that's how to blog or how to practice self-care, and it's kind of finding that balance between how you want to be known, what you want to be known as, and who you really are, and sort of marrying those two things up. You can't suddenly say to yourself, what do you know, if I ask you what you want to be known as and you're like, I want to be the next Brad Pitt, bang, gonna and you're not Brad Pitt, that ain't gonna work, is it? But it, you know, if it's resonating with who you are, that's what, yeah. I mean, you can't just, you know, make up who you want to be, because I'm sure we'd all love to be the next Zoella, you know. She's doing excellent, but if you're not Zoella, it ain't gonna work.
Yeah.
And I see this so much when watching YouTube videos, is the number of young ladies trying to speak like Zoella, trying to create the exact kind of content as Zoella. And so if you're not being authentic, people will know something's not right. But just, you know, just start blogging, just writing, try things out, experiment with different types of content, different topics, different themes, and see what resonates with you and your audience. And the things that you enjoy sharing and the things that they enjoy reading, that will be your niche.
Yeah.
For me, I believe in slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah,
so
agreed.
You know, I might not be Zoella right now, but one can always
agreed. Yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said. But probably on that topic as well, themes that problems that you get asked to solve as in your capacity as agony aunt and as a blogger coach and just as you really, what are the, because I imagine there's probably tropes, isn't there, that repeat themselves.
Most people I think are struggling with, like we were just saying, about identity and authenticity. Should I have a niche? Should or shouldn't have a niche?
One of the things that I get asked a lot is about followers, about stats, and I get asked that a lot. How can I get more views? How can I get to this magic number? And one of the things that I'll always say is, why do you want that number?
I think we have to come, now we need to start thinking as a business. So the thing about identity and authenticity and niche is more of the sort of personal and creative side of blogging. But a huge part of blogging is business.
Mm.
And we have to shift our thinking. It's a whole different part of your brain to think like a business. And yes, numbers do matter, but they also don't matter, right? Mm. They literally do and don't matter for different reasons. And that's why thinking like a business is important.
Mm.
So how we need to think about, how do we want to make money? If that's the goal, like what, you know, like you said, what are the goals? Why do they want certain numbers? Do you need to have, say, 10,000 views in order to join a certain affiliate program? do you need to have 10,000 followers on Instagram in order to be accepted for a certain campaign? If something, if there is a monetary value tied to a certain number, then yes, I totally understand why you'd want to work to that. But that being said, not all monetary opportunities are tied to statistics like that. That's just a small part of the business at large of blogging. And there are lots of different ways to make money, whether it's through direct brand or PR sponsorships and collaborations, or whether it's through affiliate marketing, or whether it's through digital products, direct selling. And the thing is, with something like affiliate marketing, you do not need the big numbers.
No.
Because if you are an authority, if you are authentic and you have a strong voice, you can have 100 followers. But if those 100 followers buy every single thing that you recommend or every service that you recommend, you can make an income.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Yeah,
there might be someone with 10,000 followers, but they only pop in once a month or so, and they're not necessarily bothered about what you've got to share or what you've got to recommend. So it's about the quality of those readers and whether they resonate with you. I keep saying this word resonate. It's obviously my word of the day, but you need to find an audience that resonates with you, and it doesn't matter whether you have 100, 1,000 or 100,000, like, it's a start.
Yeah.
And if those people really resonate with you, then they will share your work. And that's the best way to grow your audience, is to find people that will be your cheerleaders, the people that are going to share your work and say, this made a difference to me, this helped me, this inspired me, this made me feel good. You know, if you're creating content that generates that response, that's how you're going to engage an audience rather than grow numbers.
Yeah.
And they're different things, and they're different approaches, and I think there's value in both. It just depends on what your business is. So going back to what I was just saying at the beginning of my sort of tangent here, is figuring out what you want your business to look like. I think if you're going to start thinking about things like numbers and opportunities, you need to be able to spend a good amount of time working on what you want your business to look like. What does success mean to you? What are the different kinds of business models and structures that others in the industry are using, and what would be most appropriate for you? The people that are struggling in blogging are the ones that don't have that kind of focus. That are being pulled in all sorts of different directions because they see someone doing this, someone doing that, doing this, and they're almost sort of losing themselves again on what matters to them and what that success will be.
And I know that you're really interested in professionalism in our trade as content creators, and raising that professionalism and making sure we're, you know, all held accountable. So I wonder what your thinking is around how we can raise our game, how we can all hold ourselves accountable, however big or small, or, you know, whether we've got 100 followers or 1,000 followers or 100,000 followers, whether you've been on a press trip or not, how can we hold ourselves accountable to maintaining the professionalism?
I think, well, first of all, I think that in any industry, you're just going to have some people that behave unethically. And that sucks. Like, it really does. Especially when you're a new industry. So, you know, you can take the oldest industries like, say, accounting or law, and they have lots of structures and accountability and, say, unions and professional organizations that help keep their members in check. And they have codes of conduct and ethics and constant professional development opportunities. But there will still be the odd person that behaves badly and potentially damages the reputation of the entire industry. However, because blogging is so new, content creation, digital influencers, whatever we want to call it, because it's still relatively new as an industry, for many businesses that are dipping their toe into, say, digital marketing, if they get burnt once, it can and it has done just put them off permanently. In terms of ethics, it is something that I am so sort of passionate about and interested in. And I wrote a code of ethics a couple of years ago on my BlogMix site. I've made a video about it discussing it. But ethics is kind of boring to a lot of people. So it's really hard to engage people in that conversation because it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't include me. It's not relevant to me. And the thing is if you don't have that kind of foundation of ethics, then it does become a bit of a free-for-all. So what we've got is an industry where there are lots of different ways of doing it, and we don't have this kind of universal code of conduct. And it's damaging us all in the long run.
Yeah.
To have a union, it is something that Raj and I have looked into. And there's quite a lot that goes into a union, because a union is still a legal entity and there's legislation around it. And
just to interject, Raj is Elizabeth's fiance.
Yes. Oh yeah, sorry, I just assume everyone knows him. So Raj is my other half. His background's in finance and accounting. And he's actually now got a business that specializes in accounting for bloggers, content creators, freelancers, and small creative businesses. And that has come out of spending time, like me dragging him to events with me, poor guy, and just to having conversations and realizing that most of us have absolutely no idea what we're doing when it comes to money. So, and then I think a couple of people are, oh, Raj, you do accounting. Can you sort mine out? And
including
again,
me,
it's
yeah.
Just a including you. So it's, and he is, if anyone's ever met him, he's just the nicest person. He gives really great hugs. And I'm pretty sure people prefer him to me. Which content, take photos, using them in advertising campaigns, and refusing to pay for it. And the response I received from them was, well, other bloggers were fine with it, which is unacceptable.
Yeah, completely.
Sorry, you don't break the law because a couple of other people were fine with it. I'm sorry. The law's the law.
Yeah,
that's not only unprofessional, it's illegal.
Yeah.
And it's that education aspect of blogging that I feel we could do with sharing our expertise. Those of us that have been doing this for years could and should really be sharing what we do and how we run our business. And there is, at the top level of blogging, I feel like there's still a lot of secrecy.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real shame. I think that it would be nice to see more of the top level bloggers share a bit more of the inside knowledge that they have on how they run their business, because they really could help a lot of the newer bloggers. And, you know, if we share the knowledge, we're just going to be better as an industry.
I completely agree.
It's a tricky one, and it's a shame that we aren't sharing as much as we could.
Yeah.
There's a lot of blog posts that go around on how to do SEO, but there's not enough blog posts going around about how to actually run your business.
Yeah.
Or how to deal with conflict, business conflict. I mean, I'm starting to see more agencies pop up and management for bloggers being assigned to management, and I think that's incredibly interesting of it.
Yeah, I would agree. Which takes us quite neatly onto where can we find you on social media and what projects are you working on at the moment? I was wondering if BlogNix is something that you can talk about, if you're doing it or...
Well, at the moment, BlogNix is on hold because I've got to organise a wedding.
Oh, yes.
I probably should get married.
Raj
and I have been together 7 years now, so I'll give it a go. So online, I am Rosa Lilium, which is a ridiculously unusual and hard to spell name. I came up with it before I understood branding, so
I love it that people sometimes email you Rosa, just thinking that you're Rosa and that your last name's Lilium.
Dear Rosa, no, that's not my name at all. So I am Rosa Lilium everywhere online. So the things that I've got coming up, the things that I want to be concentrating on this year, is doing more of the one-to-ones, so the blog coaching. So I've been doing it informally, so to speak. I get quite a few emails and I set it up and I've kind of come up with a process that I really enjoy doing. So that's something that I want to be launching in the next sort of month or so, is doing more one-to-one blog coaching or digital business coaching, I guess.
Yeah.
Everything will be on rosalilliam.com. That's my blog. That's my online home and absolutely everything is on there. But by all means, like in between any of that, anyone that wants to get in touch or ask questions, give me a tweet.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. And if you like this episode or any of the other episodes, please think about giving me a lovely rating on iTunes. I really appreciate it. If you want to connect with me, head over to my blog, wanderloose.com, or hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest, where I'm at wanderlooseblog.